I thought Biden did a good job yesterday responding to it with the right balance of, you know, total sympathy, empathy for the parents and family of Jacob Blake, total support for the peaceful protests.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. Last time on the WAMC News Podcast, we got a view from the right when I talked to New York State Republican Committee Chair Nick Langworthy as he was attending the Republican National Convention. Now that the RNC has wrapped up, I wanted to get a view from the other side. I spoke Friday morning with the journalist Joan Walsh. She covers national affairs for The Nation and is a regular CNN contributor.
The day after one party holds its convention might mean that that party has, you know, more of a lead than they're going to have. I'm not even sure. I literally haven't even turned on the TV because I try not to do that in the mornings now to preserve my mental health. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It will matter in a couple of weeks. And I mean, Joe Biden has been ahead. He's been solidly ahead, more ahead than Hillary Clinton was at the same points in 2016. But, you know, we saw from the convention that Trump is going to try to use the unrest in Kenosha, which is very justifiable unrest. I don't support the violence, but I understand why people are in the streets. Trump's going to use that against Biden. And, you know, I thought Biden did a good job responding to it with the right balance of, you know, total sympathy, empathy for the parents and family of Jacob Blake, total support for the peaceful protests, but also, you know, not supporting the violence. And, you know, I this is what I'm thinking about. This is what I'm worried about, to be honest, that they can somehow turn this against Biden. But it seems so ridiculous because he's not that guy, you know, he's not a radical.
It's interesting that this latest flare-up has happened in Wisconsin, which is such a vital state for the Democrats, potentially. What do you think Biden should do? Should he go there? It seems like a very tough thing to thread here, because you've got to, as you say, disavow violence in the streets, but also you don't want to lose the portion of your party that's just thinking this police accountability issue has really risen to the top.
Well, yeah. And to be even more specific, you know, Joe Biden has to worry about the young Black people in his party or not in his party, you know, who just have decided that Democrats are terrible. And they remember Joe Biden. They don't remember him because they're too young, but they know Joe Biden is Mr. Crime Bill. And so that's a real problem. I mean, this is one of those classic wedge issues that Republicans have always exploited, where, you know, you've got Joe Biden has to decide between appealing to those white suburban voters who the Democrats have been bringing back in the last 4 years, no doubt about it, but also those young Black voters and some of their parents who, you know, maybe didn't vote for Hillary Clinton for whatever reason in 2016. And so that's tough. Anyway, the short answer is he's got to go to Kenosha. He's got to go to Kenosha. Hillary didn't go to Wisconsin at all in 2016. And I know she was planning to go to Green Bay, but then the Pulse nightclub shooting happened. She really was. I remember the date. It was like June 17th or something. Mm-hmm. So they canceled that. She was supposed to be there with Obama. They canceled that, and then they never rescheduled it. And so, you know, he's got to go. I really think he's got to go. And, you know, Kenosha probably has the right combination of people. This is really condescending sounding, but I went to high school in Milwaukee. You know, Kenosha is a Democratic city. I believe it went for Trump narrowly, but it's got a lot of people who would come out and see him. They would be thrilled to see him, you know, at a social distance, of course.
I want to go back to something you said a moment ago, which is Biden's legacy. on the crime bill. I'm very fascinated by the way the Republicans have attacked the Democratic ticket over the past few days at the RNC. And a lot of people I follow, you know, on Twitter and their articles have made the point that the Republicans are inconsistent in their attacks on Biden and Harris. They're labeling them at the same time as radicals, Trojan horses for socialism, but also with a bad legacy on crime. Harris was a DA. Biden has his name all over the 1994 bill. And I don't know, does that even matter to voters? I mean, it seems to me that throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, that kind of works for the Republicans, doesn't it?
It has worked. I mean, certainly. But I don't know if this will work. I mean, obviously, what they did, or not they, but even some folks on the left did to Kamala really worked in, you know, in the presidential primary. And she will still have to answer some questions about her record. But, you know, for the time, she really was a progressive DA. I just have to say, I did the first ever interview with her for a magazine. I've known her since 2002. She really intended and tried to be progressive, you know, as defined by the times, and that's almost 20 years ago. So, you know, people have been very unfair to her. But on the other hand, you know, Republicans are just being crazy. It's like either, you know, both Biden and Harris have, you know, collaborated to put a generation of black men in jail, or else they've collaborated to let, you know, criminals roam our streets. And they can't, you know, they can't decide which one it is. And given social media, two different messages actually don't necessarily have to conflict, which worries me greatly, but it's pretty ridiculous.
How united do you think the left is this time around? And I ask the question because we saw at the RNC, you know, there were some Republicans who defected to the DNC and spoke at that convention and have signed letters. But by and large, the Republican Party is now the Trump Party. They've repeated the 2016 platform. We saw at the White House, you know, a show of force and unity. But the Democrats went through a bruising primary season. There are always hurt feelings from last time around. I mean, do you think Biden still has work to do to patch that coalition together?
I really don't think he has much work to do. I mean, or that it's work that he can do. You know, I am a proud Hillary Clinton supporter from 2016. And I am now a proud admirer of Bernie Sanders in 2020. But you knew there was a but coming there. The way that he has, you know, gotten close to Biden and, you know, done his best for Joe Biden, it bothers me a little bit, although it basically thrills me because it's very good for the party. You know, Bernie has endorsed Biden in a way that he never endorsed Hillary. He's you know, gotten involved in the campaign. He says it himself. He's like, I'm closer to Joe. I like Joe better. I could, if you want to call me back and on, you know, another day and talk about sexism in politics, I might talk about that. But basically, as a Democrat, I'm super happy. Bernie has done everything he can do, and he will continue to do it. He did not do that in 2016. So I see people on Twitter, et cetera. I guess just on Twitter, not et cetera, who are still, you know, lefties trashing Biden and saying they won't vote for him. But I really think the party has never been this unified in my adult lifetime. I really think that.
Let me go to another subject with you. You wrote a piece recently in The Nation about the fight for America's state houses. And we all know there's another round of the U.S. Census and then redistricting to come. Who's going to be in charge of that? I mean, what's the state of play as, you know, in the last few years, Republicans have slowly lost what was an overwhelming majority in state houses and in governorships?
Thank you for asking me about that, because nobody really seems to care in a presidential election year.
I'm talking to you from a state capital, so.
Oh, yeah, Albany. From Albany, we can talk about how much it matters that Democrats, you know, got the Senate, not just in name only, but, you know, really elected true Democrats to the Senate, and you know, amazing legislation has passed around voting rights and other things. I mean, it's a big deal. And you know, one of the points of my piece was that people are a little bit worried that, you know, with all of the huge fires that political folks are trying to either put out or ignite, with everything going on in this election year, they worry that state legislative races are getting lost. But there really has been an enormous movement in the last, you know, since Trump, in the last 4 years, to grab back power there. And, you know, it's been kind of amazing to me. I mean, I started covering it. You know how it is. You cover something because you think it's worthy and you wish it mattered, but you know it probably doesn't. But, you know, it's your job as a journalist to do what matters and not what's going to be like read by all your readers or mm-hmm. listened to by all your audience. And I did that with Virginia in 2017. I got invited to an Emily's List training for all these first time women candidates who are running for the House of Delegates. I was like, that's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm pretty depressed by Trump. Why wouldn't I go down to Richmond and, you know, watch this? And I did it, and I wrote about it, and I had no idea that, you know, 15 Virginia Democrats would win that November, and 11 of them would be women that I met. And so it's just continued in so many states. I mean, even in places like Texas and North Carolina. And so I'm focused there because I just think, you know, if Biden wins, that will be part of it. Not to diminish what these people are doing on the ground and what it means to their constituents, because it means a lot. But I just think, you know, this is the way you build an infrastructure for small d democratic change and large d democratic politicians on the ground. And so many Democrats have ignored it for so long.
Let me ask you a diagnostic question based on that, which is, why does it take something like a Trump presidency to get so many people to wake up in Democratic politics? I mean, every 4 years we have an election, best case scenario, 50% of voters turn out for it. It seems this time maybe people are more motivated than normal, but we still know there's a huge question about turnout. And I just wonder, I mean, what's your sense of it? You've been watching politics for a long time. How come it takes something like this to get people so motivated?
This pause is not me like hanging up or, you know, you losing connection. I'm just pausing. I don't know. I mean, you know, I have been covering this for a long time, and I have been, you know, raising the alarm about low voter turnout. And we know that that's bad for Democrats in general, but I don't know. I mean, it will really be amazing if what happens is Trump revitalizes democracy, because we've seen what happens when you just let it go, when you just, you know, didn't vote, or I voted for him because he was funny, or I didn't like Hillary, da da da. When you just let it go, I have people in my family, I love them, but they didn't know, you know, they didn't get what was going to happen. And, you know, they will not vote for him again. And so I guess I'm trying to be optimistic and just say, I don't know why people didn't vote. I was certainly raised to vote. I mean, my father walked me over to the public library to register and then vote because I was in Wisconsin and we could do both at the same time. You know, I've always voted. It really was just like a civic thing. I went to the polls with my parents to see them vote. Like, but that's not necessarily true. And I don't want to, you know, criticize other people or other people's families or other cultures. They have less reason to think voting works. But that's what we need. Like, we really need a culture of, you know, you take your kids to watch you vote and you take your kids to vote when they turn 18. And hopefully we get some reforms, which, you know, Joe Biden has promised, like, which actually he can't deliver on because they've got to be state or local reforms. But whatever. The platform is young people get registered as they turn 18. There have to be a lot of signals that people need to vote, and it's just a cultural thing. And, you know, I'm hoping this is going to change this time or based on last time, but I really don't know.
Last thing, what do you think is the main priority for a Biden-Harris administration? Let's say they win, they take over January 20th. What's item number one?
Well, it's probably coronavirus. I mean, I hate to say it. I hope it's gone. But, you know, big picture, I hope you don't think this is a dodge, but restoring faith in government. So whether it's coronavirus or, you know, maybe there are even wider protests against police brutality, it's restoring faith that the federal government is on the right side. Obviously, I also think it's healthcare, health insurance. I certainly support Medicare for all. I know Biden doesn't, and I don't think that's going to happen in the next 4 years, but he's promised to get immediately to work to shore up, you know, the Affordable Care Act, which obviously he will because he loves it, and also try to give us a public option. So, you know, I do believe they will make those things a priority. But, you know, if things are as bad as they are now, it's got to be COVID, doing something about police violence and pulling us together. Did you want something more wonky than that? Because, yeah, I can totally do that. I'm a total wonk.
I mean, those seem like three big ones.
Thank you. Oh, God.
Joan Walsh, I'd like to make a date with you to check back in a couple of months, maybe before Election Day, and then maybe once again after to get your thoughts. I'm a big fan of your work, and it's just been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.